Welcome to Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom. Today we have Gregory Weaver, who is Fresnoland's environmental reporter, here to talk about an investigation that he's been working on at Fresnoland. It's out today on this obscure state law called the Williamson Act, which is a law that was designed to protect farmland from encroaching real estate interests in suburban sprawl, and how this law has been, over time as it's implemented in Fresno County, providing tens of millions of dollars of tax breaks to hedge funds, billionaires, and the Canadian Mounties Pension Fund at a cost of tens of millions to Fresno County taxpayers. Greg, could you just walk us through what are some of the key findings of your investigation?
Yeah, so the Williamson Act's a farmland program that's costed Fresno County almost $1 billion since the 1990s. And today it costs the county roughly $50 million a year. And this is potential tax revenue that could be going towards schools, roads, and a lot of other social services.
What part of the county budget, where does this come from? Where does the money come from?
It goes into their general funds. They have all sorts of programs that take from the general fund, but this is $50 million a year in foregone general fund revenue that, goes back to a really lopsided group of farmers that I found. And this isn't only Fresno County. A ballpark estimate of the statewide costs every year is nearly $500 million. And so the Williamson Act, the story's really about how this is the largest land program in the state, and it does nothing largely except for reward big farmers who are buying out smaller farmers.
Greg, could you name names? Tell us who some of the names that you saw looking at this that are getting some of the biggest tax breaks.
Yeah, so the name that everybody or a lot of listeners will probably recognize is the Assemi family. They got the most subsidies under the Williamson Act in Fresno County in 2022, which is the year that we looked at for the data. And there's a bunch of other really big investors from out of state that have been buying up farmland in Fresno County that got over $1 million in tax subsidies. So one of them is this over $100 billion pension fund run by this investment firm based in Canada, and they represent the retirement fund for the Canadian Royal Mounted Police Force. They bought up a bunch of almond land for close to $250 million in the mid-2010s. And turns out Fresno County's given them over $1 million a year in tax breaks.
I never anticipated on Fresnolandia we'd ever talk about the Canadian Mounties. And I am just so stoked that somehow they've made their way out.
I know that there's a lot of people who want to fund the police, but maybe not. This is not the way they imagine.
Very indirect subsidy here.
Yes. Okay. You've been working on this investigation for about 2 years now.
Yeah.
It's been a minute. How did you first stumble across this?
It started out submitting like we do every day with a public records request, PRA, as we call it around the office. I was following a tip about how PRA and the Williamson Act files at the county with my computer science background could follow the money on this program in a way nobody's done before. I hit pay dirt pretty quickly after. We brought up how lopsided the program really is, how 0.2% get the majority of the tax benefits from the program. Once I was able to trace back there's tens of thousands of parcels in the Williamson Act. Once I was able to trace back all these parcels back to owners and then come up with these statistics, it became a question of like, how does this happen and how exactly could this program that really nobody could justify in terms of dollars and cents, how could it go on? And so as I kept on digging into the data, the question really became for me, because we talked about this, is a very expensive program that's meant to preserve farmland. And so the big question for me were, why were these major ag players and families who were aggressively expanding their land holdings, why were they getting tax breaks intended to aid struggling farmers? And so the story really became about how really after the Great Recession, these very large investors have become interested in buying up farmland. This is a trend that's happened across America, but especially in Fresno County, which has highly profitable nut and pistachio and also raisins, but mostly nuts in terms of what we saw in the data. And normally these landowners are required to pay taxes off what they paid for the land.
Which is like how most people pay taxes.
Yes, exactly. Every homeowner understands this, that like every homeowner knows that their tax bill is based off of what they paid for their house. And so my reporting found that the Williamson Act exempts these big landowners from paying taxes based off of their purchase price. They don't pay taxes based off of this $100 million purchase price, for example. They instead pay the annual rental income, which is a figure that's orders of magnitude lower than their purchase price. This gives them roughly a 70% tax discount versus, again, what basically every other citizen, every other homeowner, resident in Fresno County normally pays. And once I was able to understand in my reporting how exactly this program works, it basically became a question of then, like, we have this loophole, it's legal, but most of the people that I talked to, once we were able to get down into why the program works the way it does, a lot of people told me that this program's effectively subsidizing farmland consolidation. And then understanding the impacts of this is what the last half of the first story is about.
And could you go into more detail on why it's possible for there to be such a differentiation between the rental value of land and the actual value of land?
Yeah, so there's kind of two variables that is important to understand this difference. I think the first one is just if the rental value of the land versus the purchase price is the same, that would mean that basically imagine renting a home for a year and then at 12 months of rent, you could buy the house outright. Any renter or homeowner listening to this would know that's ridiculous. Like, people buy property because they want to own it for years and years. And so typically, like, that's already baked into the purchase price. It's much higher than rental income because people want to keep that land for a while. So this is something that's always existed. And in my reporting, we show that this big differential actually was like one of the big hangups for the state's first tax board in the 1870s. So that's always existed. But another really important trend has happened really since the Great Recession that is also important to understand, which is that farmland for these really big investors worldwide that have emerged after a lot of the big bank bailouts after 2000 have amassed all this farmland and put them into portfolios. And once all this farmland is packaged and made into what finance people call securities, basically it makes all these big farmland assets more tradable. And because there's more, once you got something that's more tradable, it drives up the price of that asset. And so you've seen this big surge in the value of farmland per acre that has driven up this difference between the price of farmland and the rental value. And so this is why all of a sudden in 2017, you get a $200 billion pension fund coming into Fresno County and dropping close to $250 million on some nut farmland. It's because it's been turned into an asset.
Maybe it's worth just explaining. So when a big pension fund buys the farmland, do they lease it to farmers and they can still continue to operate? How does that work?
Yeah, there's multiple ways of doing this, my reporting found. There's really the two major models is one that they come in, buy up the land, and then they find some farm manager who can contract for labor and whatnot. And then there's another company in our story, Gladstone Land Corporation. They're Wall Street. They're traded. It's a publicly owned stock company or whatnot. Mm-hmm. They're also getting over $1 million in Williamson Act subsidies every year. They buy up the land, but they completely lease out the land to whatever farmer is willing to pay their rental prices.
So in the second story of the series, you look at Paul Dictos, who's Fresno County's tax assessor. And he's an unlikely character to take on reform. And you give a backstory of his history. He's very pro-agriculture. He's very conservative. But he starts digging into the program, sees some waste, starts asking questions, gets swatted out. And why, in your reporting through this story, why did you find that it was so hard for Dictos to ultimately call out a program that in a county where people seem to be pretty averse to taxpayer waste?
The stuff that we've talked about in the show so far has mostly been about the tax rule itself, rental income versus the purchase price and how these discounts work. Dictos just was trying to do something that's much, much more fundamental, which is that your rental price, he wanted people to pay taxes based off of accurate rental prices. And the County Board of Supervisors at the time Oh, here, I'll go back. So he wanted to do the purchase or the rental prices. He found out that the rental prices that the county had on the books at the time, this in the 2010s, were inaccurate. They were based off of old crops. Growers had switched to more profitable crops. All of this could have brought in more revenue for Fresno County that he found at the time, millions of dollars. And the county was really strapped for cash at that time because of the subprime mortgage crisis in 08. Value of homes in the Fresno area dropped about 15% during that time. And so the county wasn't getting as much tax revenue as they normally would. So he's trying to look under the couch cushions for spare change to help bring up all the other services that the county funds. And basically, once farmers started to see their crop information updated and getting new tax bills, this just raised a bunch of hairs on farmers around the area. And so the Board of Supervisors didn't like that, and so they just basically told Dick Dose to cut it out.
Hmm. Could the county just stop enforcing the state law if they wanted to?
So this is actually a completely run county program. The state basically gives the county an option to enroll in the program, but it's the county's job to be in the program and enforce whatever rules there are. They could stop it tomorrow if they wanted to.
Okay.
And there is another county that de-enrolled a few years ago. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So the only county in California that, like, of major farming counties that isn't enrolled in the Williamson Act is Imperial County. So in the 2010s, they basically faced the same situation that Dictus found, which is that this program is costing us a lot and it's not doing much in terms of outcomes on preserving farmland. And they just went the full nine yards and they just said, we're pulling out of this program. And yeah, they pulled out, and I think they haven't been given money to Williamson Act contracts since probably the late 2010s. And yeah.
What would you say the best argument against disenrolling? What would be, are there negative outcomes from this that the county could face, or is it just be lost revenue for those pension funds?
A lot of the farmers that are enrolled in the program right now, if the program were stopped today, wouldn't see any impact on their tax bill. The Tulare County, one of the Tulare County assessors, were a lot of farmland, obviously. I asked him this question, and yeah, he told me that most of the farmers would be absolutely fine if they weren't in the Williamson Act. The reason being that Proposition 13, it's the big tax rule for property taxes in California, that already grants property owners such a big tax discount that growers really wouldn't see a big spike in their property taxes. It's only the ones that have purchased farmland in the last 10 years, which has been big farmland investors or families like the Assimis who got big loans from agricultural banks like Prudential to buy out smaller farmers. Those are the only ones that would see a spike in their property taxes.
So you just mentioned small farmers in Tulare County, but we're also hearing from Ryan Jacobson from the Fresno County Farm Bureau saying that there will be big impacts. Why is there a difference between what you're hearing from different people?
Yeah, no, the Farm Bureau's perspective is that farmers are facing tough times right now, that they're facing low prices for a lot of the products they sell, and that they need basically every help, every piece of help that they can get. I think really when it comes down to it, though, the Williamson Act, even under this kind of measure, makes no sense. I think the big thing that to understand why is it just doesn't attend to the basics of supply and demand. The story establishes that the program is rewarding these very big growers who are entering what already crowded commodity markets like nuts and pistachios. And they put forward these huge capital outlays, these huge amounts of infrastructure to justify these high prices. And they create these economies of scale, these whole new yields, whole new intensities and record yields. These are exacerbating the issues of oversupply and driving down prices that the Farm Bureau is talking about. It's going to hurt the growers who are trying to survive on smaller yields and operations. On the basic math portion of it, it doesn't make sense, I think, to reward newcomers on the California farm scene on the basis that farmers need price supports. I think what's happening is that this happens all the time, but you're just trying to twist an old policy orthodoxy to fit these new observations of crisis within agriculture. Now, I think the reason why we're not hearing from small farmers or why the state isn't stepping in or why this hasn't been taken up by politicians just comes down to oversight. To What the second story establishes is that there's absolutely no oversight on the local level. Somebody like Dictos comes along, an elected official, and brings up some very basic issues of the program that just come down to following the letter of the law, and that's blocked at the local level due to local politics. And if the listener wants to understand like what that really looks like, there's some great quotes in the story that kind of reflect, you know, what the Board of Supervisors historically have thought about reforming this program. And then at the state level, there's no oversight as well. They don't even know, I asked them, they don't even know how much the program costs a year. Again, like a ballpark estimate is $500 million a year. The Williamson Act has so little oversight at the state level that half of the counties enrolled in the program, including Fresno County, which is either the biggest or second largest program, sub-county or second biggest county in the state that is in the program, they don't report any data about the program to the state. The state's in the dark as well. So I think what this all amounts to is small farmers really don't know how the program is working or how exactly they receive a minuscule benefit or anything from it relative to what big growers get. The local politicians, they're largely concerned with, we have a really profitable agricultural industry. Now, has it become more unequal? Does it reward really only the biggest operations over the last few generations? I think a lot of experts would tell you yes. And the state has mostly backtracked on looking at the program outcomes at all.
Let's connect this for people not in agriculture. Why is the Fresno County taxpayer, why should this story matter to them?
I think the big thing is, we have underfunded schools. This is one of the major recipients of this funding would be to schools. Another deal would be roads. Like this county has over $1 billion road maintenance shortfall. And politicians right now are trying to find ways to make it sure that your roads aren't potholed. And they're trying, the previous attempt to do this eliminated farm worker carpool programs. They tried to eliminate other public transit options, bike lanes, safe route to schools. All sorts of stuff got cut to fix potholes. I think what this story establishes that we have, a program that's cost us $1 billion, has little to show for it in terms of real outcomes. And these are dollars that could be used towards fixing roads or funding whatever stop sign or crosswalk you want down the street. The other thing that this program really brings up is that there's really two types of farming in Fresno County. There's the big west side almond plantations. And these are operations that don't employ a lot of people relative to more labor-intensive crops. They generate a lot of pollution, a lot of groundwater pollution, air pollution. When we're talking about aquifers collapsing and the aqueduct needing multi-billion-dollar upgrades, it's because these big operations are digging deep wells and pumping it so that way they can deliver for investors. This is a lot of resources going towards operations that export a lot of the stuff that they grow here. The big thing that the Williamson Act leaves open is that we have world-class vegetable growers out in Southeast Fresno. And we got Lisa Hamilton's book that's come out in the last year or two about these small rice growers out in Southeast Fresno. These are incredible crops, incredible operations that could be growing helping a flourishing food scene in Fresno. And when people talk about the breadbasket of America, Fresno being, we would hope that the sort of public policies that we lavish $50 million a year on would help support that. And basically my reporting shows it does absolutely nothing towards that. And I guess the big question for the listener is, do we want $50 million to be going towards the sort of nut operations that get shipped off to China and Europe? Or do we want to be helping small farmers out in the southeast portion of the county grow eggplants and Armenian cucumbers and kale and all these other sorts of incredible crops that we could be eating?
We're going to conclude this episode with our favorite segment, which is what we're loving this week. I'm going to start because I had a big thing this week. Some of the listeners may know that I'm on the board of the Fresno Philharmonic, and we had an incredible concert, actually two concerts last weekend, part of our Cultural Crossroads program where we connect different cultures and music. And this particular concert was called Meguru, which is a project that the Philharmonic worked with Masa Masumoto, as well as two composers, one from the Bay Area and one from UCLA. And they composed a piece that celebrated four generations of Masa's family and represented that through the seasons. And it was incredible to work on. Masa is a treasure that Fresno, the greater Fresno area, has. And it's it was an incredible concert. I only cried twice. Just twice. It was beautiful.
I'm so mad I missed it.
Yeah. Donnie, what are you loving this week?
So I've spent a lot of time in our wonderful hospitals in Fresno over the last few weeks. So I am
sorry to hear that.
It's okay. Everything's fine now, but I'm loving our healthcare workers. My daughter had the most amazing experiences at Kaiser and Valley Children's, and she plays Pokemon Go and always has Pokemon with her at all times.
What's your daughter's favorite Pokemon? I've never asked.
Charizard.
That. Charizard?
She has a little Charizard stuffy that literally she won't go anywhere without it. If you see me walking around on the weekend, I will have Charizard probably in my arms.
Do you share? Is that also your favorite Pokemon?
It's not.
What is yours? There's a lot of them. Greg, do you have a Pokemon that comes to mind?
All those cards intimidated me as a kid.
I
never attempted to play it, no.
Oh, wow.
I was collecting, you know what it was? I was collecting baseball cards.
You have one path or the other.
Yeah. I'm a Bulbasaur guy. I like the starter.
Yeah.
I like the starter characters. He was like a plant meets like a lizard of some kind, and so I like that combo.
Bulbasaur is really good. I can't believe I'm stuck. I really like Sylveon, which is the fairy version of Eevee. That's probably, and my daughter just got a Sylveon dress. It's very cute. But all of this to say, so at her hospital experiences, she had so many doctors and nurses and nurse practitioners that saw her Pokemon and then play and friended her on the game.
Oh my gosh, anyways, that's incredible.
It was a really lovely experience through a really traumatic time, so.
Greg, what about you? What are you loving this week?
I've been really, for anybody, just to go back to the farming theme, I planted my first crop of kale in a little raised bed.
What type
Farmer
of
Greg?
Kale?
I got three varieties. I got dinosaur, like the regular one. There's like another one, regular one. I can't remember even what you call it. That's like you typically get at the grocery store, and then it's called red Russian kale. That's the third one.
There are so many varieties. I grew Portuguese kale when I was in grad school, and I grew way too much, and then all my roommates had to eat it for 2 months because there was a massive crop. Kale just grows.
I got to tell you, like, for somebody who wants to, like, do their first crop, like, kale's really good because, one, it just tastes better in the supermarket varieties. It's extremely fresh. Two, it'll tell you whether or not your soil's, like, good or not because kale is a freakish plant. Like, it responds so quickly to the amount of nitrogen in your soil, which is, if you have good compost in your soil or whatnot, like, that's, like, the thing that, like, you really want to optimize for. And so, like, I have parts of my garden that, like, I buried old garden trimmings in and let it decompose, and that stuff adds nutrients to soil. Those kale plants ended up being twice as large as the regular ones.
Wow.
It tells you what you're doing right or wrong.
You're still running science experiments as an adult.
Exactly. No, it's great. I think.
Okay. Well, Greg, if you're going to bring up kale, you got to give some kind of recipe. What are you going to? Are you a salad person?
Yeah.
Are you saute it? What are you? Because kale tastes like without anything with it. It's like a cross between a tire and
It's gross.
It's disgusting.
I got to tell you, you've
how
been
do you
eating.
Cook?
Brother, you've been eating the wrong kale your whole life.
All
this stuff tastes so tender and sweet. I'm telling you, I grown your own kale, like huge dividends, easy to do. And to be honest, like I've been having it in like ramen soups for lunch.
Oh,
so I'll have ramen,
idea.
It's like a dollar. And then I'm having like incredible nutrition for free, basically after growing the kale. All you have to do is you cut it and you just cut up you wash the kale, obviously, and then cut it. And the boiling water like basically cooks it, makes it tender enough to eat. And so that's what I've been doing on the cheap, and it's very, I'm telling you, kale is the way to go.
We were accused 2 weeks ago, Donnie, of this podcast sounding like an episode of Portlandia, and now we have brought that full circle, so kale.
I really do my best.
I will say Pokemon is not really Portlandia adjacent, but growing your own kale, definitely up that alley.
Next time I come on, I'm going to have to talk about how I'm trying to keep my kale alive through the summer with shade and whatnot.
Keep it posted. That's a Fresno problem right
there. Yeah, exactly. So I heard some gardener tell me that in Fresno, shade is actually more important than mulch, which is quite, we have fertile soil already, but Yeah, Shades numero uno for basically 8 months out of the year. So
makes sense.
This has been Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom. And this podcast was recorded at Sun Stereo Warehouse in downtown Fresno. Audio editing and mixing was done by Jordan Maddox. Our lead image comes from Vaughn Ballinan. And our song comes from Stateless Rat.